honest conversations with interesting people. Hi, I'm Mike from the Genuine Chit Chat podcast, and I talk to a wide variety of guests across an eclectic range of interesting topics. People I've spoken to include a magister from the Church of Satan, a blind Australian filmmaker, a puppeteer from Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, and I also speak to musicians of all kinds of genres, authors, actors, podcasters. Really, there is no limit to who I speak to, and the subject matter is endless. So if you believe in the art of conversation and want to hear different people talking about their passions, then this is the perfect show for you. You can find Genuine Chit Chat anywhere you listen to podcasts, and there's some video versions on YouTube, so there's no reason not to tune in.
Welcome to Episode 5 of Earth 2 in the Bronze Age, The Unknown Soldier of Victory from Justice League of America number 100. Thanks for joining me today in this endeavor. As one might expect from someone who loves the Golden Age of comics, which I explore on the Classic Comics show, one of my other comic passions is the original Earth 2, as depicted in DC Comics stories of the Silver and Bronze Age. While this show aims to revisit the stories from the Bronze Age, so that's 1970 through 1985, roughly, we have to start with some context, and today our context takes us even closer to our stated goal. Starting with All-Star Comics number 58. In this episode, we begin the three-part story that reintroduces the seven soldiers of victory to the DC Universe. This is important because Star-Spangled Kid plays a huge role in the JSA when they reappear in All-Star Comics number 58. But first, let's quickly go over what happened to the JSA crossovers after the first one that we looked at in the past two episodes. After Crisis on Earth 1 and Crisis on Earth 2 from JLA 21 and 22, respectively. So, we're going to get out our Crisis on Multiple Earths collections here and just quickly glance through so you guys have an idea of what happens, because we're jumping a number of years when we get up to the reintroduction of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. As you may recall, these Justice League and Justice Society crossovers were yearly summer events. So the second year of the crossovers, 1964, is Crisis on Earth 3, and of course that introduces the Crime Syndicate of America, the Swapped Earth, where the familiar characters we know, the iterations of them, are the villains instead of the heroes. And then we go to Crisis on Earth A, which is 1965, and this is a different one with a weird, I don't remember what, it's been so long since I've read it, I don't remember what it is. Heck, Earth Without a Justice League is what it's, what we get on the cover there. And we have a different set of superpowered villains. They all look like grizzled criminal versions of the Justice League. So they're another similarly swapped Earth. I haven't read that one in a while. And then we have Crisis Between Earth 1 and Earth 2. And in that story, we get a standard sort of crossover with the teams having to come together to stop a cosmic disaster. No new characters introduced of note in that one. And that ends the first volume. And in the second volume, we get the super crisis that struck Earth 2 and the negative crisis on Earths 1 and 2 from 1967. And this is the story that introduces the Golden Age Robin as a grown-up, no longer a kid sidekick, but a man in his own right in the much maligned gray Robin costume with yellow cape that looks very much like he just stole most of Batman's costume. And then after that, we go over to the storm return of the Red Tornado. So we get the return of the Red Tornado, and this is the issue in which, so we're 1968 now, this is the story which introduces the robot Red Tornado to the world. If you remember that, or maybe you don't, that the Red Tornado, the robot Red Tornado, was originally from Earth 2. But this is the original Red Tornado from the Golden Age that was not a robot. It was a woman, Ma Hunkel, who will later on have a legacy character in the current, the most current version of the JSA, Maxine Hunkel, who is Cyclone. But this character introduced here tries to pass himself off as the original Red Tornado. And so that obviously causes some trouble for the team trying to figure out exactly what's going on with this robot. At least he honestly believes he was the Red Tornado from the Golden Age. And then after that, we get the crossover that brings Black Canary from Earth 2 to Earth 1. So some listeners may not recall that originally on Earth 1, Black Canary was not a character. She crossed over from Earth 2. So this is the story where that happens. Her husband, Larry Lance, dies, and she crosses over to Earth 1, feeling like she has nothing left to stay back on Earth 2 for. Now, of course, down the line, we learn that it's really the Black Canary's daughter that comes over, and it's not the original. So it's a little messy. It gets a little messy as the retcons try to make sense of things, because you figure if this is 1969, 1970, Black Canary, he was introduced in the late 40s, I think it's 47, at this point is going to be, you know, in her mid-40s. And she goes on to have, you know, begins a long ongoing romance with Green Arrow, which is, a huge part of those two characters from the Bronze Age onward. And it doesn't make a lot of sense if we think of Oliver Queen as a man maybe in his mid to late 20s and a woman, you know, approaching 50. I don't know. I guess it just sort of seemed odd. So they had to come up with a story to make it make a little more sense. And oddly, it doesn't really make sense until we get the Crisis on Infinite Earths and the elimination of the multiverse. And it's just one Earth where it really is the Black Canary's daughter who is now the Black Canary. So it's just a legacy character, and it makes a lot more sense as opposed to crossing over Earths and not realizing who she really is and all that sort of thing. So it does work a little better when you look at it that way. And then this, that's how this volume ends. So as you grab the next volume of the multiple Earths crossovers, we have Justice League of America number 91 and 92 from 1971. So we're just 1 year away from our featured story in this episode. And we have Solomon Grundy in this one. And I know it's not his first appearance in the Silver Age, or the Silver / Bronze Age, because he was in an issue with issue a showcase with Dr. Fate and Hourman Green Lantern back in the 60s, maybe 65, 66, something like that. So I know that's not his first appearance, but we also do get another appearance of Robin, and it looks like this might be the issue in which he gets this story, rather, one of these, he gets the his new costume. And this is the red and yellow and green one that is more consistent with his standard colors that we associate with Robin. And it is actually, I don't know if you've ever read this story before, but just quickly, it was a costume that was originally designed for Earth One's Dick Grayson, and he ends up getting it and wearing it and keeping it. Let's read those panels real quick. That's pretty neat. At the same time, in the not-too-distant Earth-U Batcave, Earth One Dick Grayson says, "Phew, some mess I am. I get smacked around by an alien kid like everyone else, and the Justice Leaguers regard me as an unproven, unfit child. Yeah, well, my reputation isn't much better. I grew up a superhero fan. I idolized them all. When I was accepted into the big-time Justice Society, I figured I'd hit the top, only to find I had to start all over again from the bottom. If my mentor Batman had enough faith in me to choose me as his replacement, how come Hawkman wouldn't even let me team up with him? I'm going through sign of the same kind of trip, away at college, split from Batman, with the same general reaction from the JLA. Before adopting my own new costume, here's one I considered. Fashioned by a costume maker, I know, Neil Adams. Say, that's real sharp, I like it. Let me try it on." So, that was Earth 2 Dick Grayson saying, Neil Adams, the comic artist, obviously, designed this costume. So Earth One puts on this costume because his has been damaged. So they have to go out, and Earth One Dick fights in that one. But he actually does end up giving back this costume to the Earth 2 Robin. I forget how that story exactly went. I'm glad I read it there. But okay, that brings us right up to Justice League number 100. So let's finally get into this. I wasted enough of your time going through extra stuff. So here we go. Justice League 100, cover dated August 1972. And on the cover we have the Seven Soldiers of Victory, and in the background, like ghostly images hovering above a grave that says, "Here lies the unknown soldier of victory," with the Justice League members and Justice Society members, a couple of representatives from each, on either side of the tomb. And at the bottom, we have 33 heroes, the greatest gathering of superstars ever recorded, the 10th annual team-up of the Justice League and Justice Society in search of the Seven Soldiers of Victory. So this is actually the 10th time they've teamed up. That's pretty cool when you think about it. 1963, 72, that would be the 10th one. "You are cordially invited," if we turn the page, "you are cordially invited to attend the greatest single gathering of superheroes ever recorded, the 100th anniversary meeting of the Justice League of America." And here we go. The splash page is identical, essentially, to the cover, the same scene, but redrawn differently. On a lonely windset mountain peak, a solitary grave stands in the mute testimony to the courage of a man, a warrior who fell in defense of his world, whose name is known only to God. Now, after many long years, others come in search of this doomed champion's forgotten identity. Can even the greatest heroes of two different Earths uncover the secret of the unknown soldier of victory? Credits for this issue are... writer is Lynn Wein. The art is by Dick Dillon and Joe Giella. Dick Dillon is the penciler. Giella is the inker. And it's edited by Julia Schwartz. And the letterer is Ben Oda. I could not find a colorist for it. I apologize to all the colorists out there. 22,300 miles above Earth's emerald surface, it whirls, a silent sentinel, eternally on the alert for danger. The orbiting headquarters of the Justice League of America. So this is the satellite era of the Justice League that we are now into. This is 10 years on since we started, so a lot has happened with the Justice League. Within its metallic confines, intricate monitoring devices go about their tasks, sending information, humming down the sterile corridors, but no one is there to notice. Instead, voices can be heard echoing through a great granite chamber, the original mountain sanctuary of the JLA. Our 100th meeting. I can hardly believe it. Seems like only yesterday we first came together. Who was it that said time flies? Speaks Aquaman. Green Arrow jumps in. Probably Methuselah, but what did he know? Feels like a million years since I started slinging that bow of mine. And then we have Hawkman, who is a new addition to the team. This is, of course, Earth 1 Hawkman. Cotter Hall of the planet Thanagar. Perhaps, Green Arrow, but you're not unique. We've all changed over the years, out of necessity, I suppose. Maybe so, maybe no. Just seems that the more we learn about ourselves, the less we really understand. Hey, this is supposed to be a celebration, says Hal Jordan, Green Lantern. The telephone rings. The telephone? How can that be? We had it disconnected months ago. So the five members we have here are Aquaman, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hawkman, and Black Canary, who we spoke about briefly earlier. So, in this continuity, it's still the original Black Canary moved over. It hasn't been retconned into being her daughter yet. Curiously, Hawkman plucks the receiver from its cradle and, "Hi, I hope I'm not late," and the Atom pops out of the phone. As you know, he can travel on the phone lines with the electric impulse. Travel along, he can shrink down small enough to travel along that way, and pops out. Easy, Black Canary, just a simple cross-circuiting trick I worked out. Hey, where is everybody? I figured the whole gang would be here by now. So do we, Adam, says Aquaman, one of what's detaining the others. And on the off chance you're wondering too, dear reader, let's switch to a central city street and find out. And we have Flash and Elongated Man fighting together to stop some crooks. And then, countless light years away, there stands a man who will miss the meeting for precisely that reason. It's Martian Manhunter, who looks like he's attempting to rebuild something on Mars, but I don't think that's countless light years away. And then we switch over to Metamorpho, and he is hightailing it away from Simon Stagg. Mason, where in blue blazes do you think you're going? Sorry, Stagg's the old pal. Rex Mason must be on your payroll, but Metamorpho goes where he wants to go, and right now he's flying to a party. And then we also have Snapper Carr, the original Justice League sidekick, and he's thinking, imagine, after the way I betrayed them, the JLA still invited me to their 100th anniversary. I'd give my right arm to go, but I can't. After what I did to them, I just couldn't face them again. I have a note here. The story of Snapper's betrayal appeared in JLA 77. So that's a story we should probably all break out and read, because I don't recall what happened with that. And in the shadow-strewn back alleys of Gotham City, we have Batman fighting some guys. Adam Strange is on the planet Ron. According to Sardis' calculations, the Zeta Beam won't wear off for several days. Too late for me to attend the Justice League extravaganza. But finally, they all start arriving, including Zatanna, who just sort of pops in and startles everyone. And then, as Batman arrives, He says, "Look who I picked up. Diana Prince, Wonder Woman. How good to see you again. I almost didn't come, Superman. Your friend here had to twist my arm." And this is the era of Wonder Woman in which she is wearing the white outfit and doesn't have any powers, which is actually quite a good run if you have a chance to read it. They collected it all in some trade paperbacks a few years ago. It's quite good. And they all go to cut a large cake celebrating the 100th anniversary. And what is it saying? If you'd like Metamorpho, we can save the cake cutter for you. It would probably taste delicious. "Come on, girls, let's talk and more action. I'm growing faint with hunger," says Green Arrow. "Green Arrow, you are growing faint. We all are," and they all start to disappear. And they suddenly pop up. Instead, the hapless heroes feel themselves falling through a void, and when light fills their eyes once more, "Where on earth are we now?" "You don't know? Oh, that's right. Ralph's never been here before." "Ralph did me. Permit me to introduce the legendary Justice Society of America." And they all have grim looks on their face. We have Johnny Thunder, Our Man, Sandman, Wesley Dodds in his original gas mask costume with the fedora and suit, Wildcat, Dr. Fate, Starman, Wonder Woman, Dr. Midnight, and the robot Red Tornado, who ended up joining the Justice Society after the previous crossover we spoke of. And after the proper salutations have exchanged, "You people look like you've been dragged through the mud. What's going on around here?" "Yes, why did you bring us to Earth 2 so abruptly?" "We have need of help, Aquaman, the sort of help only you and your colleagues can give." "Come, I will show you what you mean," says Dr. Fate. Dr. Fate explains, "This is why I brought you here, Justice League, the reasons my mystic powers snatch you from across the dimensional barriers. Look upon the hand that holds the Earth." And he's showing an image of a giant green hand holding the planet. "Twice have we tried to release that evil hand's grip upon our world, and twice we have failed. We are in sore need of help, my friends. That is why we turn to you." Hal Jordan interjects, "I'm not certain we could fare any better, Dr. Fate, unless you know more about that hand. What's it made of? Where does it come from?" Our Man chimes in, "We're still trying to puzzle out those same questions, Green Lantern. All we do know is it belongs to a menace who calls himself the Iron Hand. He has given us 48 hours to turn supreme domination of Earth over to him, or that fantastic fist will close and crush our planet to atoms." "You see, then, our predicament. We are confronted by questions that cry out for answers, but there are none to be had. In desperation, I turn to my mystic crystal in hopes of a solution. But this is all that was revealed to me." And we have in an orb, like a crystal ball, an image of a tomb. And on the tomb is inscribed, "Here in honored glory rests an unknown soldier of victory who died that his world might live." Hawkman says, "A grave? That inscription, what does it mean?" asks Zatanna. Dr. Fate continues, "Again, I know not. I could pierce the crystal veil no further. But with your presence here, Zatanna, the scales may at last be tipped in our favor." "Me? What can I do, Dr. Fate?" "That you can't. Somewhere beyond the mists of time and space exists the entity known as Oracle, from whom no secrets are withheld. My own abilities are not potent enough to penetrate the barrier, but were we to add your powers, Zatanna, along with those of Johnny Thunder's genie-like servant, to my own, we might have a chance." And of course, this is not Barbara Gordon Oracle. We are years from that. "Gotcha, Doc. Old Thunderbolt will be here in two shakes. Say you." And amazingly, as Johnny Thunder utters the ancient Badnesian chant, "Say you." "You rang, O master of the muddled and mundane? That's what I'm here for, Bright Eyes." Soon darkness envelops the room, and they summon the Oracle, and he appears as a very large, blonde, long-haired, blonde-headed, bearded man. "Who dares call Oracle from beyond?" "I dare, Oracle. I, Dr. Fate, who ask no more than a moment's indulgence from one as omnipotent as you. A moment can be an eternity to some, impudent one, but the name of Dr. Fate has reached my ears often, and naught but good has been said. So speak what you will, and Oracle will listen." He tells the tale And then the Oracle speaks. You seek solutions, Dr. Fate, but that is one thing Oracle cannot give. Your destiny is your own. Oracle can but relate what has been and allow you to choose your own course of action. Even he is not permitted to reveal the future. Where does that leave us now? If Oracle can't help us, nobody can. You misunderstand, Sandman. I did not refuse to help you. Come, gaze deeply into the eyes of Oracle, and perhaps you will find what you seek.
Who are they? Where did they come from? The Comics in Motion Network presents Classic Comics with Matthew B. Lloyd. Explore the golden age of comics. Learn where some of your favorite characters first appeared. Find out their origins, and perhaps you'll learn about some characters you've never heard of. Comics you've never seen, newspaper strips, like Terry and the Pirates or the Golden Age Daredevil. Don't be surprised to find something from the Silver Age or important moments in the history of comics. Classic Comics with Matthew B. Lloyd. Only Comics in Motion Network. Found wherever your podcasts find you.
And he takes them on a tale of the past. Many years ago, a menace similar to the one you now face bestrode your world. The awesome giant Earthman, the Nebula Man. Many of your people fell before the might of this bizarre conqueror, until there was only a handful who dared stand against him. At the top of your world they met, these bold champions and terrible titan, and the earth rang with the sound of their savage battle, until finally these heroes too fell before the Colossus. And so we have the Nebula Man, who is a giant black and purple creature that appears to have stars all running through him. Fighting the seven soldiers of victory, we see the Vigilante, Green Arrow and Speedy, Star-Spangled Kid and Stripesy, Shining Knight, and the Crimson Avenger. But these valiant warriors were not to be defeated. Again, they rose in combat with a new weapon at their command, with one of them sacrificing his life to use that secret weapon to full effect. Such was the courage of the seven soldiers of victory. Starman jumps in. Then that explains the grave. The dead soldier of victory is buried there. Sure, the seven soldiers of victory. We should have thought of them sooner. Hey, wait a second. There's something wrong here. I can't remember who in blazes are the seven soldiers of victory. This is Wildcat speaking now. Come to think of it, I can't remember either, says Iron Man. Beats me, Chum. I'm stumped too, says Johnny Thunder. Batman responds as well. Don't ask us. Nobody in the jail remembers the seven soldiers at all. Green Arrow gets his dander up a bit. Okay, Space Face, you've had your jollies. Now let us in on your little secret. Who were the seven soldiers of victory? Curious you should ask, Green Arrow, for you, of all who stand here, have the greatest affinity for said group. Gaze into the eyes of Oracle once more, and you shall see why. The seven soldiers of victory were not unlike yourselves, bold adventurers gathered together in the name of freedom. The Vigilante, in reality, Greg Sanders, the prairie troubadour, who fought crimes of the city with the weapons of the plains. The Star-Spangled Kid in Stripesy, actually wealthy young Sylvester Pemberton and his bodyguard chauffeur Pat Dugan, who battled justice in the astonishing Star Rocket Racer. The Crimson Avenger, crusading newspaper publisher Lee Travis, who, with the help of his Oriental aide Wing, carried his campaign of crime prevention into the underworld's darkest holds. Sir Justin, the Shining Knight, time-tossed paladin of King Arthur's court, who rode the flying steed Winged Victory against the forces of corruption. The Green Arrow and Speedy, millionaire financier Oliver Queen and his young ward Roy Harper, who bent their long bows to protect the innocent from the grasping claw of evil. So Earth, too, had a counterpart of me, too? So what? Half the JLA has twins on this world. That still doesn't explain why none of us remember those dudes. The reason, Green Arrow, is simple. You do not recall the seven soldiers because they no longer exist. Earth 2 Wonder Woman, who is present, chimes in. The seven soldiers were our only hope of destroying that horrible hand. If they're dead, then so are our chances for survival. Again, is Oracle misunderstood? I meant merely that the seven soldiers did not exist in this world any longer. At no point did Oracle mention their deaths. The devil you didn't. What about that grave on the mountain? My twitching nose smells a strange mystery here. If those missing heroes aren't dead, where are they? Says Elongated Man. They are gone, Elongated Man, from this time and place. Mighty were the forces unleashed in their climactic battle against the Hellspawn Nebula Man, forces which tore apart the very fabric of their existences and hurled them headlong through time's infinite corridors. The Atom then asks, then they might just as well be dead for all the good they'll do us. If what you say is true, finding them will be like looking for 7 tiny needles in a universal haystack. We wouldn't stand a cosmic chance. You're defeated. Yours are defeatist mouthings, Atom, and you're dead wrong. I do have to admit, it does seem sort of weird as if like they've already given up as soon as they get all this news. You'd think that the Justice League and Justice Society would have a little more belief in their own abilities and a little more hope that they could find the 7 soldiers. But as we go, and Aquaman says, just what is that supposed to mean? Though the gates of the future are locked, the past is Oracle's province. If you would seek those 7 missing sentinels, Oracle will point the way for you. Have we any alternative? The future of our world hangs in the single thread. We accept your generous offer, Oracle. Show us the way, agrees Dr. Fate. Down 7 of time's corridors you must walk, so deploy your fellows carefully, for those you pursue may no longer be what once they were. So they've split up into different teams here. We've got Aquaman, Aquaman, Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, and Wildcat, Sandman, Metamorpho and Superman, Black Canary, Green Arrow, and Johnny Thunder, Red Tornado, Zatanna, and The Flash, Dr. Fate, The Atom, and Elongated Man, Batman, Starman, and Hourman, and Wonder Woman, Dr. Midnight, and Hawkman. Diana, how about coming along with Hourman, Starman, and me? I'd like to, Batman, but I think I'll stay here. There should be somebody left to brief anyone else who might arrive after you've departed. If that's the way you want it, Miss Prince, but we'd really like to... Enough. It is time. The power that is Oracle now opens the chrono corridors for you, and he sends them each on separate... their separate journeys. Turn your minds back to the years, to a time before the 7 you seek had met, back to the hidden sanctuary of the arch-villain who then was called only the Hand. Turn back to a time when this master manipulator had gathered unto him the 5 greatest menaces your world had then known. They tell me I'm going to die, which is why I brought you here. The Hand will not be unremembered. You 5 will commit crimes, history's greatest crimes at my command, and all the lawmen of the world won't be able to stop you. But the Hand was incorrect, for Green Arrow and Speedy met the malevolent Professor Merlin and his minions in the blistering Death Valley, stopping the theft of a fabulous gold mine. And now he's recounting the story from Leading Comics number 1, which is the first 7 Soldiers of Victory story that that ever appeared, their introductory story. The agile Star-Spangled Kid and Stripesy battled their old foe, the Needle, in the Panama Canal Zone to protect a scientist and his vital ray device. The Shining Knight flew to the hidden Wamona Valley to protect its simple, gentle inhabitants and their treasure from the sinister Red Dragon. The Crimson Avenger and Wing journeyed to teeming Times Square to stop vicious Big Caesar from causing a power blackout that would leave New York City open to mass robbery. And the Vigilante raced to Hollywood to smash a bizarre blackmail plot devised by the diabolical Dummy. The Dummy is a kind of like the ventriloquist later on in Batman, but he's actually a dummy. He, at last, the winding paths of those 7 brave sentinels led them to the hideaway of the Hand himself, into the center of an electronic trap. But a well-placed bullet from the Vigilante severed the weapon's supports and ended the Hand's criminal career, seemingly forever. So well did they mesh to defeat the monumental menaces that they banded together at the Shining Knight's suggestion to become the 7 Soldiers of Victory. An amazing story, Oracle, but tell us more of the Hand. Why did you say only seemingly forever? All will be revealed in time, but now, Oracle, must speed you to your points of rendezvous, for the quest has begun. And we have, first, Dr. Fate, the Atom, and Elongated Man are now in what was Mexico during the height of the Aztec civilization. And we have Crimson Avenger as the king of the Aztecs. So they've got to try to get him out of there, but he believes he is... an Aztec, and the Aztec king. I am a god. Who else could have wielded such power? The power given me when I fell out of the sky. And so he's got some sort of misunderstanding of what's actually happening, and he's got some sort of power which Crimson Avenger didn't have. So the JLA has to, well, not the JLA, but our heroes, the Atom, Dr. Fate, and Elongated Man, Elongated Man and Dr. Fate get captured, which leaves the Atom to free them, and they all try to take on the Aztec warriors who are protecting their king, who is Crimson Avenger, but the Atom is able to catapult himself into the Crimson Avenger's jaw, and he switches his size and weight controls to give the heft of a 180-pound man, knocking Crimson Avenger out. My mystery-loving nose has been hard at work through this skirmish, Doc, and it keeps sniffing out the same thing, this strange glowing rock. If I'm wrong, we can apologize later, but if I'm right, we better get rid of the rock fast. I'm in complete agreement, Ralph. And they destroy this, looks like a crazy-looking glowing meteor, perhaps? A meteoroid? And when the echoes of the explosion fade, Crimson Avenger finally speaks. Where am I? What's happened to me? Who are you? First, a spell of suspension to restrain your guards, and then all will be explained to you. Dr. Fate explains, and Crimson Avenger responds, a fantastic story. Apparently, when I was hurled through time, a chunk of the shattered Nebula Man was thrown along with me, stealing my memory and imbuing me with the powers you describe. Suddenly, that smoke, it's not crimson like my own. What is it? Unless I am mistaken, Avenger, it is a passport to the future. Oracle is bringing us home. Yeah, but is he bringing us home in time? And in a darkened laboratory in another plane of existence, there is another whose thoughts are concerned with time. And we see the image of this green hand holding the earth in a laboratory of some sorts. And a man, silhouetted in darkness, speaks. They move so slowly, the hands of the clock, almost as if they were taunting me, telling me I will not succeed. But they are wrong, dead wrong. The earth will bow before my demands, and the iron hand will hold dominion over all. And here we have the reveal that it is, in fact, the hand from the first story in Leading Comics that was recounted this issue, who is now the iron hand. And that is where our first part of this three-part crossover ends. So there we go. Something to look forward to. And what's coming up next month, or next episode? We have, of course, episode number 6 with part 2 from this three-part story from Justice League America number 101. So more Seven Soldiers of Victory. Also, be on the lookout for Classic Comics episode featuring the Seven Soldiers of Victory with a special guest. I have enlisted mandatory Max Bolton Byrne as he joins me to discuss the Golden Age incarnations of these characters. Incidentally, it was already planned before I read the issue today. We're going to be covering that first story from Leading Comics, so as well as other things about the characters. So make sure you tune in for that. It'll dovetail nicely with these episodes about the Seven Soldiers in this story today in particular. And of course, you know Max from his podcast on the Comics in Motion Network, Mandatory Marvel in DC, and the Sound Alike Mandatory Music in CD. So you'll definitely want to join me for that this week with when I speak with Max. So thank you again for listening.